now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I want to know what the answer to that is.
I think that the point that when the league's
bit more snappy, okay. The can you leave in that 4 hour gap that Slotty was cogitating there as well? Hi everybody, thank you for downloading us and listening to us. It's The Ruck, our top rating weekly podcast from the Times and Sunday Times, or this week, twice weekly. It's only 2 days since we sat in the studio with the same panel, actually. Owen Slotts of The Times and Mark Evans of 350 rugby clubs. And the Eminence Grise of professional rugby, as we announced him on Tuesday. Also, there's no point in having Mark here and Owen without talking about pro rugby itself. Mark, sparing his blushes, is one of the most important figures that pro rugby in England have seen. Not only because when he was at Saracens at the very start of the pro game, he introduced a car which brought on the kicking tee. Now, you may laugh, which you have. I can tell you what, my three kids loved that car so much that they came back, and two of them are still playing rugby, and the other one, my daughter, still loves rugby, all because of that car.
Can we just confirm this is a radio control car, a little one? It's not like a Ford Fiesta.
It used to break down now and again, didn't it, Mark?
Occasionally, yeah, but yes, that was the idea. Nicked the idea, like I nicked most of my ideas at the Natal Sharks, I think. But yeah, it was good fun.
But anyway, the it started from that car, and now we're amazingly, considering there was no blueprint, the pro game is still going strong. And Mark's got about 154 ideas of where it might get even better. Before we came on air, Mark and I have had 600 arguments about promotion and relegation. In fact, we had one at someone's funeral once, which I always felt bad about, didn't we?
Yeah, that was pretty inappropriate.
It wasn't actually in the funeral.
It was in the drinks afterwards.
But he now tells me that's only to axe promotion and relegation, which he's always wanted to do, really, is only the 10th priority in the game. Today, it's a special because we're going to talk about even wider issues than the Grand Slam. We're going to talk about professional rugby. Everyone's got an opinion on it, the way it operates on the national scale and the global scale. Everybody's got an opinion on whether the major unions are just bullies and the rest of the game will never catch up with them. And Mark and Owen are two of the best people to chat through it, because the future of the game is not just done on 6-year plans, 10-year plans. It's done tomorrow, next week, and the week after that. Mark, as we said on Tuesday, was one of the driving forces of the original professional game. No one knew what the heck was going on. The RFU had not planned anything. So obviously the club owners and the investors have bailed out the whole scene, really, but also it needed hard-nosed people to drive it on. People like Peter Deakin, people like Ed Griffiths, when Saracens made a sort of resurgence, and also Mark from day one. Mark, you were there when the game went pro. You produced the famous car with the kicking tee on, but that and about a million and one other things. How do you remember those years in the late 90s when we basically didn't know if we were going to get a paycheck next week, did we?
Well, you didn't at some clubs, and at some clubs, and this is the downside, didn't, you know, West Hartlepool, Oral, Wakefield, you know, people do forget that, and that there were some casualties. People who overreached, clubs who overreached, because the cost base was unknown. And I suppose the thing I look back on and with regret, the two things, if you could change things, and, you know, one would be that the RFU didn't declare a moratorium for a year and actually had some took some brave decisions about how they would run club rugby, and I think that would have saved a huge amount of money.
So you're saying that they should, that would you regret the moratorium?
I do, very much so.
So they said basically we're going to spend a year trying to work out what to do.
And like it always happens when there's a vacuum, someone steps in, and it was John Hall, Sir John from Newcastle at the time, with a really interesting idea of a Newcastle sporting club, rapidly followed by a range of people, and clubs just scrambled. I mean, I remember Bath saying, we can't find anybody, meaning we can't find a rich fella. And Andrew Brownsword, you know, all credit to him, you know, who didn't really like rugby very much, but loved Bath, stepped up. Tony Brown, Newport, you know, who wasn't from Newport. He had a factory in Newport, and he knew how important the game was to the people of Newport, and put a lot of his own money into it. Rugby's very, very lucky that it had some people like that, because the game at club level was massively undercapitalised. You say, Steve, what was it like? I mean, I was at Saracens, and overnight Nigel Ray came in, and we turned from being a sort of a very overachieving, under-resourced club playing on a very limited sort of place to, well, people know. But we didn't really know what we were doing.
Oh, and we never really had in the media, everyone, our sports editors understood internationals. So did the rest of the world. But everyone, like from the Americans to whoever you were, didn't really understand friendlies, where you didn't actually have to do anything because you'd have the same friendlies next year. How important was it for the media, as well as the profile of the game, to have professional leagues?
There were already leagues in place, weren't there?
Mm. 87.
But the point when professionalism came around is all of a sudden John Hall could buy a team that would win the league. And I know that's a fairly crude expression, you can buy a team, but suddenly he was recruiting. I think we've seen this ever since the game went professional. You get someone on a roll like that who's prepared to push the ticket a little bit. And then if you want to play, you have to follow. And that's what happened, really. So as Mark says, some clubs were able to. Some clubs panicked and tried to and failed. Some, like Richmond, got backers in who then walked out and left the club in, you know, complete disarray. And there was a real Wild West feeling about the place, and you didn't know who was going to survive. And that's still the case now. That's still the case now, that you have wealth. The clubs only survive in this country on because of wealthy owners. I mean, they're all making a loss, and you get one new wealthy owner in, like Bristol. Steve Lansdowne comes into Bristol, and all of a sudden he's got tons of cash. I mean, he's up there in the top 50 wealthiest people in the country, whatever. So suddenly he's paying players more, and then other clubs have to follow. And this is the way it's been ever since.
When we started, Mark, would you have settled for? I mean, we just didn't know, you know, okay, Nigel Ray comes in, other investors come. We didn't know how long they'd stay. Yeah. We certainly didn't, in our wildest dreams, think that a lot of them would still be there now. Or whenever anyone left, someone else would come in. So let's be fair, we were very lucky. Do you think that actually, looking back now, we've escaped a worst fate in terms of the Aviva Premiership?
That's a really good question. Never thought about that. Probably. Yeah, although I'd look at it the other way. I don't think we've made as much progress as we could have done if we'd done it differently. Having said that, the answer to your direct question is yes, it's probably not as bad as it might have been.
Okay, I think, Owen, I mean, look, I've done this for a long, long time. People had to be there at the start or before the start, where we used to cover Metropolitan Police against Sid Cup and all this sort of stuff. You had to be there at the start or near the start to understand what it is now. And when you see Saracens and what they've done, and first of all, in their first incarnation to float the game and go up to 18,000 within weeks, but then post-Pienaar, you could say, they then did it again with great skill. I always think it's so much easier to be Leicester or Gloucester than it is to be Saracens. But I love the Premiership in all its faults. How about you?
I love it too, but I think it's a product that's not as nearly as well marketed as it should have been. I think the quality of competition and the weekly contests. I mean, the results of the last few weeks have been extraordinary, haven't they? Brilliant,
Mark,
brilliant. But you've got how many superstars have we got in this league? And I just think we shout about it a lot enough.
I don't think crowds are going up enough. I think it's an amazing product, and I think it's missed by too many people.
Mark, we've got to put the international team at the top of the pyramid, okay?
Yeah.
Last week, Eddie Jones said, well, of course, almost said, what can I do with these teams? In fact, I only get them 13 weeks a year. 13 weeks a year, that's one day in every four there with England. I could coach Bulgaria to be the Six Nations after 13 weeks. Yesterday we had Saracens against Exeter playing with tons of second team players. Have the Premiership sold out to England?
No, I don't think they have. I think that the issues are much, much broader than that.
Okay, but why don't the fans deserve to have their top players out there?
Because we've got ourselves a combination of clubs and internationals, because of some things that we'll probably go on to later in the piece, that the costs, which basically means player salaries, are so high that the only way to get anywhere near them, and not even to, other than unless you're the Rugby Football Union or to some extent the FFR, is to put on more games over more weeks every year to try and attract more crowds and more television money. That is essentially the problem. We have got the cost base of the game out of sync with its revenues, and the response, understandably, for the individual unions and the individual clubs is, well, we'll put on more games. Wales will have a fourth international. We'll do three internationals in the summer rather than two. We'll extend it into... We hear people talking about going to 14 teams and stuff. You know, French season starts in August. All of those things... Never mind talk about Sanzar and Super 15. All of those things come down to one basic problem, which is there are really only two revenue streams of any significance, ticketing and TV, stroke media. And if those don't match your outgoings because you want to be competitive, you're going to generate a whole load of unintended consequences.
Oh, and let's talk about outgoings. There is a big bill for players. Now, the over-gilding of the lily at international level, in my opinion, has been ludicrous. It's not that long since Francis Barron took the RFU staff and culled it to cut costs. There are now about four times as many people on the RFU staff as there were then. Wales are buying or have already bought these ice baths from Poland at a vast cost, millions. All they had to do was get on EasyJet to Poland and they could have used them over there. Hasn't it all become so pompous and overblown that costs are out of control and not only salaries?
I think salaries are the problem. I mean, Wales might have bought a few cryotherapy baths and a couple of extra physiotherapists or whatever, but that's not what's driven the game into the hole that Mark just described, where it can't afford itself. It can't afford itself because salaries have just shot up through the roof. If you went back 5 years and could remanage what's happened in just that half a decade, and saw all this money coming in, but actually said, we're not going to let player salaries double or triple, which is what they had done, then you wouldn't have to have those extra internationals, and you wouldn't have to have all this extra garnishing and, oh, we need more games at club level. That is where, in my opinion, the game lost itself. The clubs voted to be able to pay twice as much to the players as they did 5 years ago, and all they did was pay the players twice as much. And now they've got to play in order for the clubs to have their revenue. For me,
they've got to play for their country.
Well, they've got to play for their country, they've got to play for their club, which is why the clubs are saying, we want our players for all the big games so we get more people through.
Actually, what most of the clubs are saying, if I correct you, they're saying we want more to release our players.
Right. Okay,
there's more money in releasing players than there is incremental revenue in attendance.
Sorry, I'm totally aware of the financial imperatives and the drive, but that is no excuse for... player welfare to go completely out the window. Eddie Jones said 18 months ago, there is no way England should play three test matches at the end of the season. And he said it won't happen again. Yes, it will. There's no way you can play four internationals, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, plus someone else in the autumn, and then expect your players to go back to their clubs and do well. It's a bloody nonsense.
I agree.
People should stop putting all the blame out to costs, and a lot of it is greed.
Who's greed?
Major unions who are trying to keep their grip on it.
But I've still a lot of people, friends and that. And I said, when to come to players I know quite well, who are still playing, who are becoming a diminishing band as I get older. And I said, look, guys, you're playing too much, aren't you? They said, yeah, we are. And you're getting injured more. Yep. And it's getting a real drain on your body, and careers are going to get shorter and all the rest of it. It's an unbelievable physical game. And we all agree we play too much. But, yep. Okay. How about a 25% cut and you play fewer games?
Okay.
Now, until you cannot, and I get that, it won't come from, but there are lots of other sports around the world that link their player remuneration directly to the level of revenue. And if the level of revenue drops, player remuneration drops. Over time, possibly. We at the moment, and actually we're talking about in a part of the world which actually has got fewer problems than most of the others.
Yes.
You know, not only is this causing all the issues you said, Stephen, I agree with entirely, you know, too many games, threats to player welfare, tiredness, quite some of the games actually being a bit sort of, you know, another one, another competition, an Anglo-Welsh, an A-League. I mean, I'd get rid of all of that.
Agreed.
Squad sizes of 53. I mean, how ludicrous is that? But those issues pale into insignificance when you go and look at what's happening in some other parts of the rugby world. But it all comes back to the fact that, for all its problems, England and France are the two biggest markets. They generate 70% of the world's rugby revenue. And therefore, if wages there are going to be that high, inevitably it will denude other markets of their top players.
Well, as long as it denudes New Zealand, I'm all for it. But
you don't mean that.
I do.
No, you don't.
I do. I do. Right. Owen, let's just move on. I'm just going to ask you this question. Promotion and relegation. Recently, you did an article in which you said that the idea of the closed shop is very much back on the agenda for some.
Yeah.
And then you appeared to support that. What happened to aspirations and the likes of the next Exeter in your calculations?
Well, I love the idea of the next Exeter, and I would never legislate against it. So when I made that argument, I was very clear that you can put a fence down, but you've got to be able to lift it from time to time. You don't want to cut it off. You want to encourage it. But at the moment, promotion and relegation doesn't work. And the Championship, the second division, just doesn't work. The only team that gets promoted is the one that got relegated the season before. And the rest
of
the
not always, but usually.
Well, for the last, we're in a system where I don't think that would change for the next 20 years.
What about the
Championship has only maybe two teams that actually want to go up, and only one team can ever go up. They can't afford it. The Championship is, as a competition, doesn't exist. It's a series of games.
We've got to sell stuff to our sports editors, okay? If there's no relegation, this year is slightly different because it's been, with respect, rather obvious who the team's going to go down has always been, but it's not always like that. Sometimes it's a real bun fight, and they're brilliant games. How are you going to sell a week where none of the top teams are playing to your sports editor?
Well, I'd like to just go back on what you just said. How many games have we covered that have been massive relegation battles?
I've covered hundreds.
Well, in the last few years, I went to London Irish at Newcastle two seasons ago, I think. Well, I mean, how many years are three teams battling relegation?
Well, there have been three times in my memory where it was all down to the last game. One was at Harlequins.
One
was where Worcester had to beat someone at home and they put Saints down. And this is the biggest drama.
Steve,
I feel sorry for the clubs.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but you're talking about maybe 7-8 years ago.
Evans has got you, hasn't he?
This season we know Irish are going down. Last season we knew Bristol were going down. The season before
London
that London Welsh we knew on day two. I mean, I think the idea that relegation is a dramatic thing is
is historical, and I think we need to bring that back.
That's just a recent thing. I mean, you know, next year Bristol are up. Bristol will be much better. They'll be competitive, and it'll be close. And that's how it should be. And that's how the football is.
Next season, we already know who's going to be relegated.
Who?
Worcester will be relegated next season.
What?
We know it, Steve.
No, we don't. We don't know that at all.
Absolutely no way Worcester are surviving next season because Bristol are coming up. They've spent a lot of money and they've got a good team. And
Worcester may struggle because my
argument against it is
hang on.
No, it stops the growth of the game. Interestingly enough,
Worcester have made the fatal error of bringing in Alan Solomons, and he's made his normal fatal error of signing 96 South Africans. Worcester is a going concern and a big club, and if they had any sense there, they'd be in the top half.
Well, they're not a going concern. They're losing about $5 million a year. But no, come on.
There's a club there. You know
there
is.
Of course, there's a club there. They're a great club. I like. No, I was probably a bit facetious, but although accurate,
It's facetious. Can you be facetious and accurate?
Yeah, I just was. The paradox is why I've always been against it, because I want to grow the game. And I'll just give you two examples, right? So America's not the same, but this point I think does stand up. The NFL is a closed league, and that's the key point. It's not an open, it's a closed league in a moment in time. In the early 1970s, there were 16 teams in the NFL. Today, 1.5 generations later, there are 32. Now, please don't tell me that closing a league off in the short to medium term means you can't expand it in a controlled manner in the long run.
Mark's almost agreeing with me.
Six Nations is a closed league. The debate, quite rightly, is not... Should we have promotion and relegation? It should be. Should you go to seven at some point? Maybe only in 20 years' time. But that's the debate. And that should be the debate about the Premiership.
Should we, Mark, listen, I bow to your knowledge of global sport, but why is America is just not an example for anyone to follow?
I'll use another one if you want.
Because go on.
Well, take the biggest sport in Australia, the AFL, okay? Was, 30 years ago, didn't even have a national competition. They were state competitions. Now it's the biggest sport in Australia, winter sport, by a country mile, right? There were 18 teams in that competition. Did they always have 18? Did they have? They had 12.
And that's only because there's no promotion and relegation. It's nothing to do with the growth of the mass media.
No, nothing to do with sports TV.
Because
they're a really good example. Here we have it again in the Six Nations. You do not want to expand your league with a team that is weak. Okay, a weak team coming in, this is my argument against Georgia, right, at the moment, weakens the tournament. Your weakest team coming in new should get advantages in terms that they should get differential funding. They should get, if you have a draft, which we don't, you have draft exemptions. You build them up so that because you're going into territories where you're not weak, you've said it yourself, it's a lot harder in Newcastle than it is in Leicester or Northampton or Gloucester.
So what you're saying is you should earmark teams.
You basically have what I call managed growth. If we're looking at the game, one of my passions is I want this game to be bigger than it is at the moment, you go and say, you know what, and I declare an interest, okay? Cornwall, 500,000 people, no football, going hopefully to have a decent stadium and a rugby hotbed, okay? But the difference between what you're paying in the Championship and what you pay even to come 11th in the Premiership is something like £8 million. I'm sorry, that is a really bad way to do
just
it.
Just come back to... Understood. Let's come back to that in a second. Mark's saying that you don't want anyone coming up who's weak, okay? When Exeter came up, they were absolutely hundreds to one on to be relegated. They beat Bristol in many ways fortuitously with a Gareth Steenson penalty. Mm. Everyone thought this is going to be an absolute joke. How do you target managed growth? And do we say in the papers, and the next team for managed growth on their way up are?
The managed growth league. The managed growth team,
yeah.
By Grobo.
You say where are we weak and where do we think we could over 20 years?
So you do it geographically.
Or you do it where there's a market. And at the end of the day, you say, where are there enough people who really love our game who could create an audience?
That's interesting. So first of all, on the Exeter thing, I agree. Brilliant role models.
£10 million capital injection from a land sale didn't half help.
Yeah,
and I love it.
So what are you going to do? Give it back?
Well, no.
That's what happens. Nigel Ray was a windfall. He didn't know.
Of course.
That's what happens.
No, Steve, that's my whole argument.
Do you put £10 million into something if you're a businessman unless you've really gone into it and studied it?
Yes. All the time. You buy a yacht. You're saying nobody. Your Exeter is always the example you use.
Example.
So I'm saying, can you get promoted without a windfall?
Yes. Of course you can.
Give me an example.
I mean, loads of teams have been promoted without a windfall.
Who?
London Welsh.
Straight back down.
Committed suicide in the process.
And nearly put the club at risk.
They hadn't gone up, they'd probably still be a professional team.
I totally agree. Look, I'm a London Welsh member. I've been since the 70s. And recently I went to a dinner there with a great night. And I met there thousands of people I played with who've all come back now because it's our club again. Mm. And no one wanted to go to Oxford and Whitney or wherever they were going to go. Again, if you're saying Exeter is slightly different, well, so is London Welsh in the other way. Mark, what are you saying? You're in charge of the new structure, okay? Right. Here's the team. It's a closed shop for how long?
No, okay. My first point would be, as I said to you earlier off air, promotion relegation, I think, is almost past its sell-by date for rugby in this country. I don't think it's one of the big, big issues we need to fix. Okay, but I'm happy to talk about it, but it would be nowhere near top of my list.
But would you keep it?
Would I keep it at the moment?
Yeah.
If I could get other things in exchange, yes, I would.
You keep promotion
relegation.
But
if I could change everything I would like to change, no, I wouldn't.
Right, you're in charge. What are you going to change?
Can I just... on this promotion relegation, yeah. Which clubs in this country actually want to go up into the Premiership? Because I reckon...
Who are in the Championship?
Or below. Because I reckon you can name them. Obviously...
Bristol.
Obviously. We know. Yorkshire Carnegie in the long run. Cornish Pirates in the long run?
Yes.
But if Cornish Pirates won the Championship this season, then it would just be a disaster.
It would be a disaster.
So beyond that, anyone else in the Championship?
Ealing
Trailfinders say they do. But if they went up,
London.
I reckon they'd be bust within a month. Below that, maybe Coventry and Tunbridge Wells apparently are very...
Here's the thing. Outside of England maybe could support two tiers. I'm not sure they can, but maybe. Certainly not in the structure we've got now. Most other countries certainly can't. They just can't. I mean, it's really interesting. Australia tried to put in a second tier in between the Super 15s and the club rugby, and it's just died a death. It's a great way of producing players, but it's a financial black hole.
Mark, what's your plan? Briefly, your plan?
Briefly, it's impossible.
You said
the headlines.
Fine.
Well, independent governance of the league would be a big step. We don't even have an independent chairman now, so therefore you have somebody who is passionate about their own club, also chairs the league. Now that to me seems nonsensical, and is not. How do you then govern the league in the interest of the league when you've got somebody? It's a clear conflict.
Independent governing.
An independent governance. I'd actually try and get a sort of a commission. I'd empower the centre a lot more than we have at the moment.
Hmm.
And I'd have a lot of the authority vested in the league as opposed to its constituent clubs. I'd have a collective bargaining agreement with the players' union for conditions of service. Some of the conditions of service for the Championship clubs, players, are we should be ashamed in this country.
We have
professional rugby players on that sort of money. We don't even have a minimum wage.
Would that be a body which you feel would have to keep a check on wages?
Well, there's lots. Of course, it's part of the you bargain. It's a collect. You bargain with the players' union and the league and the union, because of the system we've got. We'll come to a collective bargaining agreement. They do it in cricket. They do it in virtually every other sport. We just let wages get determined by negotiation by individual players. It's crazy.
So we've got individual chairman and then we've got a collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, I'd have a squad size cap.
Yeah.
I'd get rid of all the A-leagues. I'd get rid of all the Anglo-Welsh. I'd get rid of every... we are a premiership team. We run a premiership squad of 36 players. We
totally
play Europe and we play that.
Oh, and you like that? Just clearing away all the dross?
Well, Anglo Welsh has got to go. A League is a nonsense.
Yeah.
They've got that wrong. They're fighting for that. The clubs, that's wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But how, what do you do with your kids that come through the academy then?
They play in the championship.
Do you work on that dual registry?
We're getting into real minutiae, but roughly, okay. I like the system that
Apologies to everyone listening. I'm fascinated by this minutiae. it's become.
I'd start. So let's take a squad of 36 for however the six European games and the 22. So 28 games, squad of 36. You also then run a second-tier squad, and they have to be under a certain age. And if you get injuries, here's another thing I think is wrong with our game, and I'll tell you this from personal experience. When I ran Melbourne Storm, we had a salary cap that worked, and we lost one of our best players, who took 15% of our cap in game one, minute 23. I'll never forget it. He didn't play again the whole season. Now, under our system over here, you can go out and just spend more money under an injury dispensation.
Yeah.
In the NRL system, they just say, suck it up. Hard luck, that's sport. It's all about luck. You're going to have to work real hard.
Okay.
And we worked with an 85% salary cap all year. What does that do? Well, it makes it more interesting. No one's won the NRL back-to-back since 92.
Hmm.
That's not a coincidence.
Hmm.
So
don't you think that Saracens, having put everything into what they've done, deserve to win it 10 years on the trot if they can?
No, I think it's financial doping.
Financial doping?
It's like Man City. I love watching Man City.
That's like Team Sky. It was Dave Brailsford who talked about financial doping.
I love
doping.
Watching Man City. I think Guardiola's an absolutely sensational coach. But do I think, in my sporting sense, do I enjoy seeing a team funded by a sovereign state winning the EPL because of the amount of money they spend? No, I don't.
But you can't. But theoretically, at least, financial doping can't exist in the Premiership because there's a salary cap.
That is the theory.
Right,
Mark. Your next financial doping. Don't know whether that'll pass the lawyer, but we'll ask him to come in a minute to get the bloke with the wig in. Carry on. What are your other concessions to retain promotion and relegation?
So what have we gone through? So a collective bargaining agreement, squad side, independent commission, fewer games. Well, actually, I'd settle for that. That would be a decent start.
Well, I think that is a decent start.
Oh, and a salary cap that works.
Okay, okay.
I think the squad size of 36 is a bit bonkers. Squad size is
games you play.
Squad size has got to go up, and I think there should be a minimum squad size. Because if you have a minimum number of players in your squad, say 40, then you have to share
them. And no maximum.
And you have a maximum. Then you have to have them all playing less games.
Yeah. Right. While we all calm down, we'll be back shortly. Welcome back to the Ruck. We've just given a good dusting to the idea of promotion and relegation, and I think Mark and Ando are talking big sense there. We may disagree about some of it. I may be more into the ethics and goodness of rugby than some people who are obsessed by finance. But fair enough. I do like the idea of just clearing out the season, less fixtures, and, you know, Monday night A game. Blimey, good for the lads in there. But Mark, would not some of these lads who don't hardly ever play for their pro clubs, would they not go into the championship and be useful there?
Yeah, I would have a feeder system like baseball in America.
Okay.
And I'd make it one of the conditions of being in the league that you matched up with a team in the next tier down.
Okay. Cornwall.
Yeah.
We've all been there on tours and had a magnificent time. And look, I just love the place. I love it in the spring, the summer, autumn and the winter. Stadium for Cornwall. Are we almost there, or are you almost there with the stadium?
Yeah, well, it's certainly coming to the sharp end.
Right.
It'll either get the funding that we've requested. We've raised quite a bit in the private sector, and we're now asking Cornwall Council whether they would partner with us to bring it to fruition. It'll be decided by April. It'll either happen or unfortunately.
What's your gut feeling?
I don't have a gut feel. I don't live in Cornwall. I'm not there enough to work the sort of. At the end of the day, it comes down to a vote of the full council, and hopefully we're going to work as hard as we possibly can to make sure we win that vote.
Owen, Stadium for Cornwall, it sounds great, especially when you're talking about. Wouldn't it be nice to have an Exeter? Then you've got someone on the west, even if it's only in the Championship, as long as they're good and competitive.
Oh, I'd love it. What I don't know is what's the capacity intended?
First phase, which is where all the money is about 5,000-6,000. And you could get it to Premiership standard of 10,000, which you need with it over a summer. There's no point putting that in while they're in the Championship.
And if say you got it up to 10 and were allowed to be promoted, how quickly would you get a decent crowd? What crowd would you get?
Oh, nobody can predict that. But
the marketing people must have.
Well, I do a fair bit of work in this area, but the basic rule of thumb is, do you have 500,000 people within 45 minutes drive of your ground without a major football club? That's a sort of really decent rule of thumb. There are some historical exceptions to that, but that pretty much works virtually everywhere. And that's what, given that that's why they want to move from Penzance, which is right down the bottom, as we all know, to Truro, which is right in the middle. And then when they do that, I think they've got a market, and I think therefore they could get to start with in the Premiership 8,000-10,000.
So if you basically looking for areas where they haven't got a decent football club anywhere near, Highbury in North London would be a possibility. Mark, rugby league, one of your other loves, or one of your main loves, maybe.
I'm a Union boy, but I do like league.
Okay. Boston, Massachusetts. As I said at the start, how do you get a club in Boston that works when you can't get one in London for rugby league?
Well, we don't know yet, and it's very early days. But I'm helping out in a pretty minor capacity with a group that are doing a sort of feasibility with other people who are sort of trying to put it together in that bit of America. To see whether it would stack up. It doesn't look completely
bonkers as it sounds.
Well, that's good, because it sounds bonkers.
It bloody does, doesn't it?
Oh, in rugby league, my son Duncan's was a massive rugby league fan. I've watched it, I still is, and I've watched it for donkey's years. In fact, the second game I ever covered for the Sunday Times was the rugby league final, but it really is, in terms of promotion and visibility in the South, really at a low ebb at the moment. What do you think of the game? And it's no longer. Do you see it as a rival to rugby union as it used to be?
No, not really. I think it's become a bit of a feeder sport in some respects, which rugby league people will hate hearing.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It hasn't worked down here. I remember when rugby league turned itself into the Super League, which was really just a form of repackaging itself, and finding that quite exciting at the time, and feeling that they were going to make grounds into the Union game. But in fact, over the 2 decades since, the opposite has happened.
It's funny. There's a documentary on BBC Wales from Carolyn Hitt this Friday, I think, about all the people who went north, and they all said, oh, I want to further my blah, blah, blah. Obviously, they went for the money. But, Mark, let's be fair, rugby league's got to keep going. There are rumours that Sky are not going to pay as much for next time because they've got to save money for football. What should they do?
Look, rugby league is... I love the sport, and it's interesting having worked in a country which is much bigger than rugby union, and you get a lot of the counter-arguments. That was a good learning experience for me. I think rugby league... it's cultural. Sport's cultural. It's very, very hard to grow a sport in an area where there is no cultural affinity. I know that sounds incredibly sort of highfalutin.
But it's true.
But it's true. Hmm. Okay, you can't make people love a sport that they don't know. Well, you can, but it costs an awful lot of money. Really an awful lot of money.
It's a slow process, and a million people have failed trying to do this.
And I think that actually that rugby league needs to... concentrate a lot of its limited resources on being strong in its heartlands. Because you don't have to be an international game. I'll go back to a sport I keep referring to because it's so influential. AFL, which is the biggest sport in Australia, only got 23 million people in the whole country, is the dominant sport in four states. It's got a total market of about 13 million people, and it outrates every other football code in the country on any metric: attendance, revenue, membership, whatever you
so
like.
So how does that apply to rugby league in England?
What I'm saying is I think sometimes rugby league have got carried away with some kind of chimera.
Yeah.
That, we just need to be a national sport. I'm not totally committed. I mean, rugby union's not a national sport at a professional level. Mm. Let's be quite clear.
I agree with that. They've spent... Rugby league has made so many attempts to reach out and take over and be, but it's brilliant where it is. And
well, actually, you could argue rugby league should concentrate on Manchester and Liverpool, but two big cities where it's not that strong.
But the thing is, they keep on trying with London, and you know, London's, it was in the ploughed field in Oxfordshire a few years ago. You know, it does surprise me, actually, but if you can get it off in London, as you say, Mark, if you can't do London, you should, and Boston, Massachusetts, you should actually give up. Let me ask you one more thing, guys, before we go. I think we've given the whole game a bit of a dusting, but one more issue, guys. On Monday, okay, just one more thing, briefly. Early hours of Monday morning, I was watching from the Nevada desert the HSBC American leg of the Sevens. We've seen the Olympics. We've seen that make a gorgeous impact. We saw Perry Baker become the best attacking rugby player I've ever seen. Agree or disagree? Sevens, do we love it? Is it getting above his station? Is it affecting the development of 15-a-side games in places like America, Canada and the Pacific Islands? Mark?
Yes, I love it. I don't love it as much as 15s, and it's doing a much better job than 15s is in growing the footprint of the sport. Those countries you've mentioned, growing rugby through sevens is a lot easier, and the 15s game, in some ways you could argue, is shrinking in terms of its competitiveness. There aren't that many countries. In fact, there are probably fewer than there were 30 years ago, where 15s is, you can't genuinely argue that 15s is stronger in Australia than it was, that Romania, Italy, that it's just South Africa,
Canada.
It's just not true. So that sevens is which doesn't have as much baggage, which doesn't have as many vested interests, which is lower cost, is doing a fantastic job.
That doesn't do Rugby World Cup, which is the financial generator of so much of rugby, doesn't do it any good if the number of competitive teams goes down and down. Mark is saying that Sevens is promoting the sport, but that in many countries rugby is retreating in terms of class at top level.
Yeah, but I don't think Sevens' success is making 15s less
correct,
less powerful elsewhere.
I agree.
I just think World Rugby, formerly the IRB, has spent decades trying to, a bit like Rugby League, trying to move into different territories and trying to get America or Germany or whatever. We've been talking about this for years, haven't we? When are we going to see some more superpowers in rugby? And it has failed. But then you look at the sevens and you see countries that aren't traditional rugby countries competing, and I think that's fantastic.
Finally, Mark, you started off as a gnarly old hooker with Saracens in Bramby Road, where people used to walk their dogs across the field.
That's a myth. No, it's not. Actually,
despite all the meetings you've been in and all the times you've banged your head against a brick wall, do you still love rugby?
Absolutely besotted by it.
Slotty, even though you're in your current elevated state
well, as rugby writer. I am the king, so I have to, don't I? Well, honestly, to honest answer to that question is, since I've been a full-time rugby journalist, I found it more interesting than I had previously suspected, almost for this very reason, because I think rugby is you could call it a crisis or you can call it a fascinating point in its development, because we don't know where it's going and it actually isn't working.
I think some parts of its culture are not as white saintly as we think, but there we go. I still think it's a great thing for young boys and to play, and also young girls. And the one good thing about it is the sevens is bringing people in. And when you say that the Iranian team have got a women's sevens team, well, that's something. And we've not spoken about the girls yet, but how fantastic the boom there. But I think everyone should be on their guard. I love it too, but only in relatively small doses sometimes.
Hang in there, Jonesy. Hang in there. It's all right.
Keep the faith.
Mark Evans of...
of Everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, so we haven't got time. Mark Evans of Everywhere. Thank you, Mark. And hurry back into rugby. I think it needs you. I can't believe that you're not gainfully employed in a massive job. And Owen, you are gainfully employed in a massive job. And you just won an award for it. Thanks a million, guys.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.